This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. The latest data from the Federal Reserve, it's from 2022, shows that 13% of Black Americans are unbanked. To quote the Fed, that means that neither they nor their spouse or partner had a checking, savings, or money market account. The comparable figure for white Americans, just 3%. And as often happens, the root cause can be found in history here at the end of the Civil War and the rise and the collapse of something called the Freedmen's Savings Bank. Dr. Justine Hill Edwards is an associate professor of history at the University of Virginia, also the author of a forthcoming book about the Freedmen's Bank. Professor Edwards, welcome to the program. Good to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
For those unfamiliar, could you give a 30-ish second précis of the Freedmen's Bank?
Sure. Well, the Freedmen's Bank, also known as the Freedmen Savings and Trust Company, was a savings bank founded in March of 1865, and it was founded by a group of white politicians and philanthropists for the financial benefit of recently freed slaves.
As I was prepping to speak with you, it occurred to me that the phrase well-meaning white philanthropists should probably be appended here. Is that fair?
That is absolutely true. The basic foundations of the Freedmen's Bank were created by white Northerners who in some ways really believed that they could economically help the nation's almost 4 million freed African Americans. And so they conceived of the bank as a vehicle to help them make the really dangerous transition from slavery to freedom, but in terms of their finances and economics.
The reason this bank failed matters through, you know, not just the history of that period, but up to today, right?
It does. There was a financial crisis in the fall of 1873, and African Americans started to withdraw their money en masse. Frederick Douglass comes in. He becomes the bank's president in March 1874, and he looks at the bank's finances and realizes that the bank is over-leveraged. The finance committee had approved of millions of dollars of bank loans that were not going to be repaid. And interestingly enough, the majority of those loans went to the white partners and businessmen who were affiliated with the bank's trustees.
We should point out here that was the Frederick Douglass.
Yes, the one and only Frederick Douglass, the most photographed man of the 19th century, was the bank's last president.
Okay. All right. So with all of that as context, I want to do a little prologue here. Was the supposition by the people who started this bank that Black Americans had not had, not necessarily financial institutions, but financial know-how and financial practices before emancipation?
Yes, that's right. And in many ways, they really didn't understand the financial knowledge that African Americans were bringing with them into freedom. African Americans who were enslaved were cultivating ideas of how to make and save money in the period of slavery. And so they were bringing with them very concrete ideas about saving and what they wanted to do with their money, which was to buy property and buy land.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next, because, you know, one of the many, many, many tragedies of the Black American economic experience is the inability that Black Americans have had to build generational wealth. And in a way, it kind of starts here. You relate this story either in an article I read or parts of your other writings about during the Great Depression, a descendant of one of these people writing to FDR saying, it would be really great if I could get my hands on my grandmother's, you know, deposit right now.
Exactly. And so we see that there is kind of a generational memory of the Freedmen's Bank and its failure. And I think in many ways, too, it's dictated the oftentimes fraught relationship that we've seen between the financial services industry and African Americans in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Well, say more about that, because this was 150 something years ago that this happened. And it, you know, your theory of the case here is that it affects things today.
Yes. I mean, we see, especially in the period after the bank ends, we see African Americans continue not to trust and engage with the financial services industry that becomes so important in building credit to be able to purchase homes, to pass down generational wealth. And so in some ways, it's not surprising that the wealth gap is as staggering as it is today.
As you have done the research for your forthcoming book on this subject, the title of which we'll get to when we say goodbye here, I imagine there were so many instances as you were doing the research where it was a what if moment. What if things had been different? What if they hadn't expanded to white bankers? What if the loans had gone to some of the recently enslaved Black Americans? There must have been so many turning points where today it would have been so different.
Sure. I mean, I have heard just in my own family the idea of saving money not in banks, but underneath the mattress. In many ways, I think that these kind of memories of the bank, even though we may not have the language to connect it to behaviors today, it's there, which is why I think that the history of this bank is so important.
Justine Hill Edwards is an associate professor of history at the University of Virginia. She's got a book coming out on the subject at hand today. It's called Savings and Trust, the Rise and Betrayal of the Freedman's Bank. Professor Edwards, thanks for your time, ma'am. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.